What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the program. It is episode 381 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. As always, you can listen to the program on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, and you can follow along on Facebook and X for the latest updates on our social pages. Good to be back with you folks this week. Got a good amount of stuff to get to, maybe not a lot of local team stuff, Bruins and Celtics, we got some stuff, little Red Sox as well. I will also be giving you a free or a full recap of Super Bowl 59 last night, so get into that as well. Looking forward to this week's guest Friday. We got a good returning guest coming back to talk Celtics about where the team is at this point. Obviously, Celtics are approaching the All-Star break with 2 games left before the All-Star break this weekend, so we'll have a great guest Friday for you guys later in the week. Want to say thank you to Evan Marinofsky for coming on guest Friday last week, talking some Bruins, talking some Four Nations face-off as that kicks off this week. We'll also take a little bit of a look into that as well as the games start on Wednesday this week. Team USA starts on Thursday, so we'll take a look at that later in the program. But yeah, if you have not listened to that episode, you can go listen to it. Evan's a great, great listen. Evan also does Bruins Beat, which is a podcast that you can listen to wherever you get your podcasts. He also writes for the New England Hockey Journal, which is a local hockey magazine. So yeah, great stuff that you can check out with from Evan. So I think we're gonna start this week. I think keep with the hockey theme from guest Friday last week and start with the Bruins. And I'll be honest, guys, it's not super peachy talking about the Bruins at the moment. And I think that was kind of the theme of talking to Evan last week, that I think the both of us kind of are in a position where, based on what we've seen to this point, we're not seeing a team that inspires much confidence. And that's kind of disappointing because I think one of the best things about this Bruins team for the last, 15 years or so, has been their ability to, be resilient and bounce back and, show you that, okay, they can be down in the dumps, but they can bounce back and, show you that they got, good team resiliency, that they're able to bounce back. And you haven't really seen that this year. There have been too many moments where this team gives you hope, playing well for a certain period of time, and then it just kind of, crashes down. And it's almost like you've not seen this team be consistent really once this season, through any kind of stretch. I think they've been playing better as of late, but then, of these 2 games, the last 2 games that they've played where they hold third period leads and can't hang on to it, and I think at this point, with the position that the team is in, they can't afford to be losing games like that with where they are in the standings and, how tightly packed it is in the Eastern Conference at the moment, and you can't afford to be dropping those games. Every game at this point, whatever many games they have left, 25, I want to say. You're needing to, 25 games left. You're needing to treat these games like playoff games because of where you are in the standings and the fact that teams have games in hand on the Bruins. And so it's like you need to be able to win games when points are at a premium and, losing games when you have a lead in the third period, never a good recipe. And we've seen that the last 2 games where the Bruins, I think play well enough to carry a lead into the third period and they lose both games. And, as inconsistent and as frustrating as they've been pretty good in those types of games where they hold a third period lead. I think that they were, had point to like 16-0-2 coming into Wednesday's game when they had a lead in the third period. And to lose both games against the Rangers in Vegas on Saturday. And so, again, it just really nothing about this team gives you confidence in terms of, having the ability to, turn things around and, find a gear that says, okay, this is clearly a playoff team. You've kind of been waiting all season long for them to kind of catch their tempo, so to speak. And it's not happened. And they've tried, well, personally, I don't think that they've tried everything, but I think they've tried a lot of things, changing the coach, I think changing certain line combinations, and trying to see what works. I don't know if they've done everything they can to try to inject some youth to see if that gives them the spark. They haven't really done that this season, which is, a whole nother conversation that's just mind-bogglingly frustrating when you see guys like Oliver Wahlstrom getting, unlimited rope and unlimited opportunities, and he's got 2 points in, 15 games or whatever it is, and you have these two guys in, Mrkulov and Lysell that are playing really well in Providence and, haven't really gotten much of an opportunity. Wahlstrom is a guy that has one goal in 15 games. And it's kind of just like, at a certain point, how much we're giving somebody too much rope that is kind of just, I don't know, somebody that's not really giving you enough. And it's like, I don't really understand why the Bruins aren't using all their resources to try to get the team out of a funk that they've been in all season. It's not to say that, Wahlstrom's been the problem, because there have been other guys that have not played as well as they should. But it's like, I feel like this team's not using all the options at their disposal to try to dig themselves out of, what's been kind of a season-long malaise, So I just, talking about this team is just, exhausting in a way, because I feel like it's kind of the same games that you see often where they come in with not a lot of jump. They, can get some goals because you have a guy like Pasternak who's now, starting to play exactly the way that we would expect. Geeky's been really good this season as well, but you don't really have a lot of consistency outside of those two on a night-to-night basis. And that's kind of the biggest thing in this league, where it's like you have to be consistent every single night, and far too often it's Pasternak carrying the load. It's the same guys. It's not different guys every night, which, I think that's always the hallmark of a really good team, that they're different guys doing different things every night, in terms of playing well. And, I think obviously this season, the time that they've missed Hampus Lindholm, I think, has been, huge too. I think that that's definitely played into the team's, inconsistency, that they've been without him for 3 months at this point, and I think is not, they're not expecting his return until after the Four Nations break in late February. So, I think that's been definitely part of their issues. But I think, last couple of games, it's losing third period leads, it's, not being focused, and, the team just, I don't know, being just uninspiring. And it's been like that for a while. And I almost feel like at this point where they are, it should be a clear indication to, ownership and the fans of this team that playoffs should not be the focus for this team. And it pains me to say that, because if a team is in the mix and competing for a playoff spot, which is what they're doing. Obviously, you want to be able to compete for a playoff spot, but it's almost just like the team that you watch night in and night out doesn't give you much confidence. And it's just, for me, like I feel like them getting into the playoffs and possibly, playing a team like Washington or, if they have to play Florida again, I don't feel confident about their ability to win a game or two in a seven game series. And look, I know it's the playoffs. I know crazy things can happen, and I think outside of baseball, it's the most unpredictable postseason where crazy things can happen. You can, ride a hot goalie to win a playoff series. You can have a guy that, lights it up in a series and scores, 14 points in six games. Someone like Pastrnak has the ability to do that, but I just feel like I don't expect this team to do that. And I almost feel like I'd rather have this team kind of say, hey, it's not going to happen for us this year. Let's try to recoup some draft picks. Let's try to reload in a season or two rather than pushing all our chips into the middle and losing in the first round in five games. That doesn't help anybody. And I just feel like that seems like that's going to be more likely than this team winning a round or two because Swayman gets hot again, and I'm not going to discount him or discount Pastrnak, but it's like a lot would have to go right for this team to kind of just change on a dime and make the playoffs. And who knows? Maybe this 2 week break changes something with this team and they go on a, Columbus Blue Jackets type run where they win like 15 games in a row and do something insane. I don't think that they're going to be capable of doing that, but you never know. 25 games to go, and if they win 16 or 17 games, that's probably good enough to get you to the playoffs. But there's nothing in this team right now that gives you the confidence that says, okay, yes, this is what they're going to do. Because, as I said, really outside of Pastrnak and Geeky, there's nobody that gives you a lot of confidence in terms of like, okay, they're going to start turning it on. I think Marchand's had a solid season, 20 goals, but it's just, you still don't have enough from the other guys in your lineup, I think, really, to be confident about the team going forward. And maybe someone like Lindholm does change some things a little bit, but it's hard for me to have confidence in this group. And I almost just feel like it's going to be easier for this team if they just, agree to sell some pieces, and try to see if they could bring in a younger player with term or, try to get some draft picks. Because I think, again, I don't think that, I don't think that pushing all your chips into the middle to make another postseason run just to lose in the first round, I just don't know if that makes sense. And it just, the team's too inconsistent. You have a really good game against the Rangers last weekend that we talked about, and then they followed it up with an excellent performance against the Minnesota Wild, one of the best teams in the Western Conference, a 3-0 shutout. But then it's like, here they come in the next night, take a lead into the third period, and you're like, okay, here we go. They'll get back-to-back wins. They'll get right back into the playoffs, and Rangers tie the game and then take the lead on a shorthanded goal, the ultimate kind of kick to the gut where the Bruins have, struggled on the power play all year, and it ends up, going completely the other way where they give up a shorthanded goal. And then, Vegas, as talented as they are, the Bruins, can't hold another third period lead and, lose it in the last couple of minutes with that Vegas power play that is just ridiculous, the amount of talent that they can roll out there. And the Bruins just, can't make enough plays down the stretch to, tie the game or be able to, clinch it in the third period. So It's hard for me because this has always been a program that I try to do things differently and try to see, the positive and the optimistic. But, I just feel like it's wishful thinking with this group that they're just going to turn things around and make the playoffs because, you kind of have to with the trade deadline coming up as quickly as it is, you kind of need to approach it with the sense of like, okay, this is what the team is. You played 57 games. This is no longer, oh, let's see where the team is by this point. You know what they are. And I feel like, making some trades to try to make the playoffs doesn't seem like the smartest way to go. And it almost seems like, as I said earlier, you kind of need to just be like, hey, like this is where we are. And it doesn't make sense to try to push all our chips into the middle to make the playoffs and likely lose in the first round. It just seems like it's a lot smarter if the Bruins look into trading somebody like a Trent Frederick or a Brandon Carlo or a Charlie Coyle or, I know that it would be crazy to say, but even somebody like Marchand, like I think if he wants to go somewhere and go chase winning another cup, then I think the Bruins should entertain that. Now, I don't think Brad's actually going to do that. I think that he seems to be a guy that would want to stick around here, be a Bruin for life, but you never know. So I think I'd like for this team to very clearly choose a path. I have my own opinions about what they should be doing based on where they are, but you never know. The Bruins brass may have more confidence in this team, but I got to tell you that I think there's not a lot that gives me confidence in this team, unfortunately, as much as it hurts to say, but kind of just is what it is. The goaltending has not been good enough this year, really. Secondary scoring's been bad. Your special teams have just kind of tanked, and it's a flawed team that I think doesn't give you a lot of hope, unfortunately. So, that's where things stand right now. Bruins will be off. Obviously, all teams will be off until February 22nd for the Four Nations tournament. So, probably won't be too much Bruins talk for the next couple weeks, but this is where they are. We'll take a look at the standings later in the program, but I think we're going to move on. Bruins will come back from the break, play Anaheim on February 22nd, which is a Saturday. So we're going to move on, talk a little Celtics. Celtics coming off a great win against the New York Knicks on Saturday night. Celtics playing their first game at Madison Square Garden this season, beating the Knicks on opening night 132 to 109. It was kind of similar here, huh? Kind of similar here in New York. Saturday night, Celtics winning 131 to 104. Just an elite offensive performance by the Celtics in this game. And I think a pretty solid week for the Celtics. I know that there was the letdown against the Mavericks on Thursday, but I think bookended or San or you had that game sandwiched between, I think, two really good performances against Eastern Conference elite teams. Obviously talking about the win over the Cavaliers last week and then the big win over the Knicks Saturday night. I think that just an outstanding team game. Both games, really, honestly, I think I would say. Really good team win in Cleveland. Tatum, is the high scorer, 22 points. But I thought that everybody played really, really well in that game. Al Horford had 10 rebounds, made a number of big shots. Jaylen Brown had it going early. I've really liked the Celtics compete and their defensive level in that game Tuesday night. I think that was, huge. I think that gives you confidence, that type of game that the Celtics can go into a Cleveland in, potential game seven in the Eastern Conference playoffs and be able to get a win. I think, for whatever reason, the Celtics have been a better road team this season, like pretty significantly. And I think they just are a very a go about their business kind of team. And I think that was very clear against Cleveland. It was close throughout pretty much the whole game. Cleveland made a run. Derrick White was huge in that fourth quarter. It was like everybody had their key moments at different points. And I always think that that's a mark of a very good team, that you can have different guys kind of step up in different moments. Whether it was Jaylen Brown early in the game attacking, getting to the basket, or Derrick White, knocking down big threes in the fourth quarter, Al Horford having a really solid game as well. I think it's just different guys stepping up at different times. And I think, obviously that Knicks game was a little different. Celtics definitely broke it open at various points with just the three-point shooting barrage and just how dominant and aggressive Jason Tatum was. I feel like that was one of his best games this season, and it just was like you could sense right off the start, with that big dunk that he had in the first minute of the game, where he just takes it to the basket, throws it down, and you're like, okay, this is a focused, ready to perform Celtics team and a ready to perform Jason Tatum. So I think for that team, getting both of those wins in tough environments against teams that likely you're going to be battling against in the playoffs in May and June, and or April, May, June, whatever you want to say, like winning games like that and being dominant, really kind of shows the rest of the East that, hey, we've had some issues, certainly, but it's like when the stage is the brightest, when the stage is the biggest, we're going to be out here and perform. And I thought it was great that they played so well without Kristaps Porzingis, a guy that's, I think, really started to kind of catch his rhythm in terms of being in the lineup regularly and, being a focal point of the offense. And, both Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum were really good in certain moments in that game. And Luke Kornet was huge getting a start. I thought he was excellent. It's really pretty, it's really pretty wild when you think about how far Luke Kornet has come, that a couple of years ago he kind of was just another bench body that you kind of wasn't sure whether he was playable, but it's like you watch him play and he just understands where to be, just is such a smart player, just a really high IQ kind of player, where may not be the most athletic, may not be the most, physically imposing, but he just knows where to be. And I just think it's impressive that, he's improved as a player. The Celtics have developed him, and given him those opportunities. And I talk all the time on this program that with the Celtics being a second apron team and not really being able to do a lot of major, roster shifting, developing guys like Luke Kornet is huge because you don't have the flexibility of other teams to be able to make, big time moves every season. But if you're developing guys like Luke Kornet, if you're developing guys like Sam Hauser, giving guys like Jordan Walsh, Baylor Shireman, even Jaden Springer, I know he got traded, but giving those guys opportunities to show what they can do, I think is huge. So I just really love to see Luke's game on Saturday night. I really thought that he was outstanding. Peyton Pritchard, that's another guy that they've developed too. And he was amazing. I mean, it just a guy that I think if he's not on the Celtics, good chance that he could start for like 12 or 15 NBA teams. Like he could start. Like he is that just that good, and that, again, a really smart player, a guy that knows just knows the game, is so smart and is a knockdown shooter, plays with an edge, and it's just like just a guy that is so much fun to watch. It's one of those games where when he has it going, you're excited when he has the ball because you're like, okay, what kind of crazy stuff is he gonna do? Is he gonna hit a step back three or take somebody to the basket, do the, deceleration that he's so good at? It's just like a guy that is just so much fun to watch. And obviously it's easy when things are going well. I know it's easy to, get so excited about this team. And it is, obviously frustrating when they have games like Thursday night where the effort just is not really there. It's kind of lacking defensively. And you kind of are like, okay, you wish this team could not, have these kinds of letdowns. And seems like it's happening more at home and happening against teams that it really shouldn't be happening against, because then it's like you see them play on the road against elite teams and they're up for games and they're making plays. And then it's like you play a Dallas team that I think was motivated to come in there, but it's like they're missing three starters. The Celtics really had no excuse for coming into that game and not playing with the level of focus and intensity and, matching physicality and, setting the tempo. And I think that's what kind of makes this season kind of puzzling. So they can have these great games against teams that are really good. And you are just like, okay, yeah, like this is the team that should be threatening to win back-to-back championships. And then they play Dallas or a team that maybe is shorthanded or a team that's not as good record-wise, and for some reason they just have a hard time. And I don't think that it's really a major concern for me, because I think you get to postseason basketball, and I think this is a team that takes those games seriously. And I think it's just maybe just one of those things that for this team it's just sometimes difficult to get up for games. And I know that they're trying to kind of shake that, but I think it does. Sure, it's kind of frustrating, but it does kind of give you comfort that, okay, they're able to so turn it on and off, so to speak. Obviously, that's a dangerous game that you play, but I think when the games really matter, when they're playing teams that, kind of force you to take the game more seriously, that kind of sounds bad. It kind of sounds like they're being complacent, but it's just you have that big stage of playing in New York against the Knicks in a game like Saturday night, and the Celtics just were on it and just were not going to be denied. They were going to be aggressive and take the game to the Knicks, and they did that early and did that often. So great performance by the Celtics Saturday night. Makes you feel good about their chances against the Knicks later in the season, potentially in the playoffs. So Celtics will have two games before the All-Star break. We'll take on the new look Miami Heat in Miami tonight. And then they will welcome Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs to the Garden on Wednesday night. So Celtics, two kind of interesting games they have before the All-Star break. Very excited to see the Spurs and Wembanyama and the newly acquired De'Aaron Fox. Really good move for the Spurs at the trade deadline, I thought. It'll be interesting to see a Heat team, performing without the services of Jimmy Butler. It did sound like a number of players that they acquired from Golden State, including Kyle Anderson and Andrew Wiggins, may make their Heat debuts tonight. So be interesting to see those guys in a Heat uniform. So, hopefully the Celtics can keep the positive vibes going and, kind of maintain that level of intensity and force, because I feel like when they play that way, you could tell right away that they were playing with force in that Knicks game. And so I think it's just, they can play like that, I think they're almost unbeatable. And it's pretty crazy to think that they did that Saturday night without two of their starters. Holiday and Porzingis. I think Holiday might be out again tonight. Not sure about Porzingis, but should be an interesting one against the Heat tonight, and then the Spurs on Wednesday. So in other Celtics news, they obviously traded Jaden Springer to the Rockets last week at the trade deadline. A little bit of a surprise, but I think the Celtics wanted to try to save a little bit on their tax bill. I think I understood. So I think that was the reasoning behind that trade, getting a future second-round pick. In return, Celtics also signed Torrey Craig as well. He's a kind of a journeyman who's played for a number of different teams. I actually didn't realize this. He actually played overseas for a couple of years and then came over to the NBA. He's played with the Suns, with the Bucks, and most recently with the Chicago Bulls. Played 9 games this year. Was waived. Is a really good three-point shooter, shooting this season, I think, about 42%, which is pretty good, a pretty good defender as well. So I think I like the signing. You know, I'm not expecting that you're going to see him play too much. You know, I think kind of just a good veteran presence to have on the bench and a guy to, you know, call upon if you need his services to play a couple minutes. You know, I kind of liken him a little bit to O'Shea Brissett. Maybe not as athletic, but I think a guy that's a good veteran presence, played for a bunch of different teams, has been around. You know, he is 34. It's kind of older than I thought, but then I was like, oh, that's right, he did play overseas. So I like the move. You know, I don't think it's anything crazy, but I think it's always good to have, you know, kind of a player like that on your bench, you know, in case there's injury or whatever. So I think that that was a solid move. So I think that's going to do it for the Celtics. Going to move on, talk a little bit about the Red Sox. I think the only news that's interesting to me is that Nolan Arenado, the Red Sox seem to have some interest there in bringing him in a trade. Seems like he is interested in playing for the Red Sox. Obviously has been a very good third baseman. The majority of his career has been an all-star, although kind of has dropped off a little bit in recent seasons, not nearly as good at the plate, but still can give you some good defense. And so I think that's certainly interesting to me, because obviously, you know, he's played third base his entire career, you know, so I'm not sure really, you know, what the plan would be for him. You know, if they have bring him over in a trade, you know, obviously you have to consider what the Red Sox may move for him, because he's, you know, still a pretty good player. You know, I don't think is kind of the perennial all-star player that he used to be. You know, clearly I think then that would be a major trade if the Red Sox were trying to bring in that type of player. Don't think that he's that type of player anymore, but it would be very interesting to see, you know, what could potentially go over to St. Louis in a trade. But I think the idea of him coming over would be interesting. You know, I think it would be interesting to me if the Red Sox, do they consider moving somebody like Devers to DH? You know, there's always the concerns about his defense. You know, would you keep Arenado at third? Would you move him to somewhere like second base or a shortstop? You know, I think given his age, it may not be like a long-term move that the Red Sox make to bring him in. You know, he's 33 years old, so it's like kind of is on the older side. And so I feel like if the Red Sox did bring him over, maybe it's not necessarily blocking the development of a Christian Campbell at second base, and so they could move him there. I do also think it could be interesting if, you know, Arenado becomes a DH, but I think like he still can give you good defense. So I feel like if the Red Sox did bring him over, he's either playing second base or he's playing third base, and they move Devers to DH and they trade somebody like a Yoshida. But I think it is interesting to think about. You know, I think I would like the move. Arenado, I think, still a solid player. Still can give you some good defense. Is a right-handed bat. Red Sox are always looking for guys like that. And I think can give you a little bit of leadership in the locker room as well. A guy that's been around in the majors for a while. There also is that connection that he played in Colorado with Trevor Story. Kind of forgot about that. So, you know, that could be an interesting element as well. It is also interesting that he wants to play for the Red Sox, so I think that's something to keep your eye on. Alex Bregman, I think, certainly is somebody to keep your eye on as well. As he is unsigned, his training camp or spring training is kind of about to kick off. I think the latest rumors are that he wants a 6 or 7 year deal, which, if I'm the Red Sox, I'm not going to give him that. Respectfully, I think that's going to be a little too much. And I don't want to be the, oh, cheap Red Sox fan or whatever, but it's kind of just like, I don't know if you need him that much to kind of way overspend. I also feel like I like the idea of an Arenado a little bit more than Bregman, just I think in terms of where they are in this stage of their career and kind of what they're looking for. So, I think both of those players definitely worth keeping an eye on as spring training workouts are about to begin. We'll certainly be giving you more updates on the Sox as spring training kicks off. They're 11 days away from the spring training opener against Northeastern. So I think we're about a week or so away from pitchers and catchers reporting, or maybe that's later this week. And then everybody else will report soon after. So definitely exciting time if you're a baseball fan, as obviously football season ended last night, so won't be waiting too long for baseball to start. So I think we're going to move on before we talk Super Bowl. I think it makes sense to talk Bean Pot a little bit as the championship is tonight. Obviously, the big rivalry between BU and BC will have another chapter tonight in the Bean Pot Championship, first time that the two teams have played each other in the championship since 2016. So definitely, if you're a hockey fan, college hockey fan, tune into that. That's 7:30 tonight on NESN. BU number one, number eight, or I'm sorry, BC number one in the country, BU number 10. So that will definitely be worth watching tonight. So we're going to talk football now that football season is over with the Super Bowl happening last night. Obviously, congratulations to the Philadelphia Eagles for winning last night in what really was a blowout. The final score suggested that it was a little closer, but the Eagles just dominating this game. There's not a whole lot to really report about this game. I think for me, it was kind of clear from the jump that this is an Eagles team that was motivated and focused. I think clearly from the Super Bowl loss that they had to the Chiefs a couple of years ago that they were not going to be denied this time. What was really stood out to me and stood out to me almost immediately was the way that the Eagles just dominated the trenches. They were a really good offensive line, keeping Jalen Hurts clean. The Chiefs, I think, did force a bad throw, the interception, but other than that, I thought that the Eagles did a tremendous job, keeping him upright. And it was very interesting that, Saquon Barkley really didn't get going really at all in this game at 57 yards rushing. But I thought that the offensive line gave Jalen Hurts the time to throw, the time to be able to, make the right reads down the field. He was outstanding. Thought their offensive line was good. Jalen Hurts was good. Didn't try to do too much, really played well within himself, which I was really impressed with. I think that when he's able to play like that, that team is almost unbeatable. When he's taking care of the ball and making the right throws and just, reading the game. And I thought that he was really, really good. So the Eagles, I think, offensively did pretty much anything they wanted in the pass game. But I thought their defense was amazing. I thought their front seven was just ferocious and did not let Kansas City really do anything offensively until the game was pretty much in hand. I thought that they really overmatched the Chiefs, offensive line and were in the backfield constantly. I don't think Patrick Mahomes helped his cause very much either. It didn't seem like he was very comfortable in the pocket all night. It kind of seemed like he was often trying to get out of the pocket and make plays, which he's good at for sure, but I feel like it didn't handle the pressure as well as he normally would. And I just think the Eagles were just tremendous in this game, really, in all phases. They were really good, and I don't think gave the Chiefs really any hope. It was kind of a game that, you could say probably was over in the first half, over in the late in the second quarter. And the second half was kind of just for pride, and the Chiefs got some touchdowns to make the final score appear closer, but the Eagles were just so dominant, and really, I don't think this game was close, whatsoever. So big credit to them, big credit to the team that they put together. And I think the coaching staff, big credit to them. Vic Fangio, really had that defense playing outstanding. Nick Sirianni, I think, as much as, I'm not wild about him as a coach, I think did do a really good job with this group and keeping them motivated and keeping them focused. So I think big congratulations to them. Glad that they got the job done. So I do think going forward, this is definitely the team to beat in the NFL. I mean, I'm not entirely sure about their free agents and such, but this is a really, really good football team that I think really could be in line to kind of be that next team. If the Chiefs, not sure what's next for them, but I think the Eagles are a really good football team that certainly could be in contention to win another next season. So we'll definitely pay attention to that. So I think I'm going to get to some other NFL notes. It was reported, I think, yesterday before the game that Kellen Moore, the Eagles' offensive coordinator, is expected to become the new head coach of the New Orleans Saints. Also, the 49ers, Debo Samuel, requesting a trade for the 49ers, granting him permission to find a trade. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. And it sounds like the Jets and Aaron Rodgers the Jets are unlikely to bring him back in 2025. So I'm actually looking at this. The favorites to win Super Bowl in 2026, it's actually the Chiefs and the Ravens, which is kind of surprising to me. But again, congrats to the Eagles, and I think they'll definitely be a team that's in contention to win back to back. So we'll take a look at some NBA here. Anthony Davis, after being traded to the Mavericks, was hurt in his Mavericks debut. I think he had 26 points and 14 rebounds, but had to leave in the third quarter and is now reported to be out for multiple weeks with an abdominal injury. Do you think that Luka is expected to make his Lakers debut some point this week? Giannis will be out through the All-Star break with a calf injury, will not participate in the All-Star game, and will be replaced by Trae Young. Also, a note that I wanted to mention, Hubie Brown broadcasted his final game on ESPN yesterday, and I just thought that it made sense to kind of give a little note about his broadcasting career. I remember, growing up watching early NBA games and seeing him, broadcast the NBA finals and games like that. And it was always a joy to listen to whenever, he was on the call for Celtics games or any games that I was listening to. So definitely happy trails to Hubie, a guy that was an NBA lifer, a guy that started out in the coaching world, coached for many, many years, and then obviously great work as a broadcaster. I thought it was really nice to see some of the tributes to him, during the game yesterday afternoon between the Bucks and the Sixers. It just was really, really nice to see the moments that you saw the different, play-by-play broadcasters that he had worked with, saying some really kind words about, what he meant to them. So I thought that was really, really nice to see that. But yeah, I think tremendous career for Hubie with, 91 years old, still broadcasting NBA games. I thought that was really, really, really special. So definitely happy trails to him and, happy retirement. So we'll take a look. Some NBA games tonight as we are entering the last week of the regular season before the All-Star break. 7 o'clock starts with Minnesota and Cleveland, Atlanta and Orlando, San Antonio and Washington, 7:30 Celtics and the Heat, Hornets and the Nets at 8 o'clock on NBA TV have Warriors and the Bucks, and then at 8 o'clock also the Pelicans and the Thunder at 8:30, Kings and the Mavericks, 9 o'clock Portland and Denver, and then at 10:30 Utah and the Lakers on ESPN. We'll take a look at the standings here. The Celtics still 5.5 games back of first place of the Cavaliers. Do have a 2.5 game lead over the Knicks. That was a pretty huge win for the Celtics Saturday. Give them a little bit of breathing room there. The Pacers in fourth place, followed by the Bucks and the Pistons in fifth and sixth. And then in the play-in spots, you have the Heat, the Magic, the Hawks, and the Bulls, 7-10. And then the Sixers in that final spot, just outside the play-in spot, a game and a half back of the Bulls. In the Western Conference, Oklahoma City has a 7.5 game lead over the Grizzlies. Nuggets are in third, followed by Houston, the Lakers, and the Timberwolves. In the play-in spots, you have the Clippers, Mavericks, Kings, and the Suns, and the Warriors, even with the Suns and the Kings for that final play-in spot. So we're going to take a look at the NHL notes here. I think before we do that, we're going to take a look at the Four Nations schedule that kicks off on Wednesday, Canada and Sweden on Wednesday night in Montreal. And then, USA will play Finland Thursday night at 8, Thursday night at 8, also in Montreal. So we'll take a look at some of the other games. So it is just a round robin where each team will play each other. So the first games, they're Wednesday and Thursday. And then Saturday, USA will play Canada. Finland will play Sweden. And then Monday the 17th, Canada and Finland, Sweden and the US. And then Thursday the 20th is the championship game in Boston. So a lot to look forward to with this tournament. I think, it's kind of tough that there's only one game that each country will play against each other. Kind of would like to see more, but that'll make it that much more exciting. So the game Wednesday on TNT, Canada and Sweden, and then US and Finland Thursday on ESPN, 8 o'clock starts for both of those games. Also, it's announced that Jake Sanderson of the Senators will replace Quinn Hughes on the U.S. roster. So that was news this morning. And Sidney Crosby is hoping to play for Team Canada despite sustaining an injury. Drew Doughty will be playing for Team Canada, replacing Alex Pietrangelo. And Alex Ovechkin is now 16 goals away from setting the NHL all-time record for goals as 879, 16 away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's all-time record. So getting even closer. So will definitely be something to pay attention to. the rest of the season. So with no games in the NHL for 2 weeks, I'm going to take a look at the standings as where all the teams stand at this point in the Atlantic. You have Florida with 71 points, followed by Toronto with 68 and Tampa Bay with 66. In the Metro, Washington leads the division and the conference with 80 points, followed by Carolina with 70 and New Jersey with 68. And then in the wild card spots, you have Ottawa with 62 points, Detroit with 61, Columbus and the Bruins 1 point out of that final playoff spot. In the Western Conference, Winnipeg on top of the conference and the NHL with 81 points, Dallas with 72 in second, Minnesota in third with 70, and then in the Pacific, Edmonton and Vegas tied atop the division with 72 points, LA with 65 in third, and then in the wild card spots, Colorado with 68 points, Vancouver with 63, and Calgary is 3 points back of that final playoff spot. So I think it's probably going to do it for the sports. Obviously, Major League Baseball will get going with spring training games later this week. Or next week, or 10 days away from spring training games. So I think that's probably going to do it for the sports this week. We're going to get into a new top five. Meant to actually mention that off the top, but we got a new top five this week. I know last week probably would have been a good time to do this top five, but I think with yesterday being the Super Bowl, you know, all kinds of great food and snacks I'm sure everybody had watching the game yesterday, I thought it would make perfect sense to do a Super Bowl snacks top five here. So we're going to rank my top five Super Bowl snacks. So number one, I think, is the easiest answer in the history of any of these, or in the short history of top fives. I think this is the easiest decision for me. Wings, number one, is Super Bowl snack. I mean, you know, football and chicken wings, it's just match made in heaven. So that was like an easy number one for me, you know, however you like them. If you like, you know, traditional buffalo, if you like, you know, barbecue wings or any kind of other kind of flavor, you know, a garlic parm or something like that, really can't go wrong with chicken wings, boneless or bone in. I know that there's always a debate in terms of boneless or bone in, but honestly, like, can't go wrong with either one. So I would say that's definitely a clear number one Super Bowl snack. Now, number two, maybe we're getting into some opinions here. I would say nachos, number two. Really can't go wrong with any kind of combination, whether it's just cheese, whether you got, you know, any other kind of toppings. Really, I think, can get very creative with this one. So I would say that's a pretty good number two. Really can't go wrong with any kind of crunch. You know, you need some kind of crunch on Super Bowl Sunday. I mean, come on, what are we doing? So I think that's a good number two for me. Number three, pizza. You know, I think that's a pretty clear, you know, can't go wrong here. Maybe not the most traditional thing on Super Bowl Sunday, but I think pizza's pizza. Everybody likes pizza. Something wrong with you if you don't like pizza, respectfully. But I think that's a good Super Bowl snack. You know, any kind of toppings, really, can't go wrong. Number four, this is kind of maybe an off-the-board pick, but pigs in a blanket. I feel like it's one of the rare applications where pigs in a blanket makes a lot of sense. You know, obviously, you could have your any kind of party, but I feel like it makes a lot of sense when you're watching football. So I would say that's a good number four for me. Then number five, this is kind of open to interpretation, but I would say dip of any kind, whether it's a buffalo chicken dip, you know, could be something as simple as like a ranch dip or like a seven layer dip or something like that. I think any kind of dip is definitely a good call. So, you know, all kinds of dips I would definitely include there. Would I include chips and salsa there? I probably would, or like a guacamole. I know that that's maybe crazy to include all of those things, you know, in there. But I think that that's probably would be a good number five. Then honorable mention, chili, I think, is a good football snack as well. You know, whatever you like in a chili, you can really get pretty creative there. Quesadilla is also really good, really easy. My mom made some good quesadillas last night, so I think that made sense to put that in there as an honorable mention. You know, you can have that with a salsa, guacamole, a sour cream, whatever you prefer. I think I really like the idea of versatile snacks. So that's kind of where we went with this top five this week. But hopefully everybody enjoyed their Super Bowl snacks last night and enjoyed the game and the commercials. So definitely wish that the game was a little bit closer, but, you know, sometimes just the way it goes. So I think that's going to do it for me this week. I got a great guest Friday for you guys later this week talking Celtics. So we will talk to you then.